colors that you fly. Love just one nation.
In the whole world we divide. You say you're sorry. There's no other choice. God bless the people now who cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa, we may even find a solution to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Violence brings one thing, more and more of the same. Military madness, smell of flesh and burning pain. So I sing out to the masses, stand up if you're still sane. All of us gone crazy. I sing this one refrain. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa, we may even find a solution to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. I said, power to the peace.
PFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado. We're streamed on the internet at khen.org, and Truth Quest programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info. And I'm going to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And tonight I have two co-hosts. Shannon Hemingway and Katie O'Brien are back, and our special guest is John Hutchison. And John is a Canadian inventor known for his claims of inventions and discoveries of a variety of extraordinary phenomena which other researchers and often Hutchison himself have... I can't believe I pulled up that one. That was a terrible one.
All right. Just make it up as you go.
John, you could probably do a better job at it than Wikipedia.
Oh, the Wikipedia is all wrong. I put links in there to my blog spot to try and correct it. Wikipedia. I call it Wackypedia. They really have... Oh, yeah, it's very bad. I don't know why it's very bad. I keep enlightening them to update it to all the new stuff, but they don't want to do that for some reason. My partner published a book on the Hutchison effect called Mind Benders. Just came out some months ago. Kind of a look at yours truly through my partner's eyes. It was forwarded by Colonel John Alexander, Dr. Hal Pudoff, and a bunch of other scientists on good notes in the forewords. And I read the book and had a good laugh, of course. It involved a lot of different people, like Inscum. And other, I guess you call it, the term is alphabet letter people or alphabet agencies or something like that?
Alphabet soup agencies, I think.
That's, yeah, okay. It's a new term, I guess, they use these days. Anyway, that was kind of cool. So I guess what I should say is what I've done was replicate a lot of Tesla's work a long time ago when I was a kid, and... had all kinds of unusual things happen, like levitation of any kind of objects of any weight, as well as strange things happening to metals, turning into rubbery materials and falling apart and transforming into other materials, which I didn't think anything of it until I started to meet people that thought it was very important, and then they promoted it to the Reagan Star War program at the time. So a team was called together, headed by Bob Freeberg, Colonel John Alexander and friends in Los Alamos, where I gave a presentation to them. And then later on, that wasn't too much of a good test, but Colonel John called in McDonnell Douglas Aerospace, George Jack Houck, who then did another filming of the effects and all that too. Then after that I just put it on national news in Canada on CTV Network News at 6 o'clock news, and that was quite a hit. So from then on I gave other demonstrations to the Canadian government and then to other news people, and then I worked with Boeing group for a while, and then I went off to Germany, and then I was over there for 2 years in 89 to 1991. While I was away, the lab was stolen by the Canadian government. So when I returned here, there's all kind of mysterious, weird stuff going on. It made the front page of the newspapers, which looked kind of spooky looking and strange, of course. The headlines are kind of weird. It just said, Ministry secretly builds site in Surrey, British Columbia. And that's where they had the lab hidden away. The fence around it. No trespassing. Oh, my goodness. So
your lab was kidnapped.
Kidnapped, yeah.
And what kind of background in education or training? Did you come from something like that, or...
No, I didn't. I flunked my coloring book and blocks, to be honest.
It's a good sign.
Yeah, I wasn't programmed by university.
Well, look, you kind of zipped by, but like the most important, most interesting scientist like ever. As a child or as a young man, you recreated some Tesla experiments?
Yeah, I studied as much as I could on him. Then there was a lot of documentation released at the time too on Tesla's patents and engineering skills, the Colorado Spring notes, as well as a lot of diagrams and information on machinery. And it was lucky because in Vancouver there was this vintage machinery, electrical machinery as it was called then, not electronics, all over the place, which I acquired and really helped me in accelerating the replicated lab of Tesla's. Some of the components were actually the same that Tesla would have used. Certain transformers, certain oscillators from that time period. So I had all the scrap people in Vancouver going around looking for, searching for stuff for me and actually delivering it, sometimes for free.
Wow. Best way.
They just didn't want it, and they found, I guess, an out for it, which was me, and then I built it up to quite a lab.
So what do you consider the most important experiments that came out of Tesla's time that we know about, and which ones did you would you like to be able to replicate, or have you replicated what you want to of his work?
No, I think I pretty much replicated all of it. I think the most interesting that benefited all folks is, of course, Tesla's alternating current, which George Westinghouse promoted and made into reality, and then also Tesla's radio communications, which Marconi took advantage of it, and then later on it was discovered that Tesla actually developed it. So there's a few others too that Tesla brought forth into the world, and one of his main goals was free energy for everybody, and that was squashed by J. Pierpont Morgan at the time.
Could you tell us some of the anomalous behavior caused by what has been keyed the Hutchinson effect?
Well, there's strange things like moving objects of any weight and size up to a great distance away. In this area here of New Westminster, it started affecting other buildings, and that's caused some problems with the mayor, who then had to call in people to investigate what's going on. That was around 2008. Late 2007-2008. I'll just stop there for a minute. And then the other effects, of course, is the metal turning soft and falling apart, which is on videotape. All the stuff's videotaped. But, unfortunately, also that was affecting people's ornaments in other buildings.
How far away would you get... Would this be affecting other people? Do you know?
Up to a half a mile in late 2007, when a film person was here filming with me. He filmed the effects, but at the same time he started to feel ill, as well as the city of New Westminster, a good portion of it felt ill at the same time, kind of like certain dizziness. And Tom went back to Los Angeles and appeared on KSLX radio with one of my producers in Los Angeles, Robert Drake. And Tom phoned into the station talking about his adventure, but his adventure also captured the interest of a scientist friend of mine, Ken Shoulders, an actor friend of mine, Steven Seagal, an actress friend of mine, Paris Hilton, to the point where, like, people were asking all sorts of different questions, and it got kind of, I'd say, pretty wild. But Tom recovered okay. He had to go to an emergency hospital for treatment. He recorded everything that happened to him and all the people that interviewed him, and he put it on a blogger himself. That was quite a time. He filmed here in late 2007. It was December 27. I think it was just after History Channel was here filming. In that same time period, I had a whole pile of different film crews coming and going out of here in 2007 and 2006, almost nonstop. And some of the shows haven't aired yet, but should be airing soon. So the effects have brought people contacting the news media, and they get interviewed, and luckily I have all this stuff on VHS tape, which I've been converting and downloading onto my YouTube channel, which is John K. Hutchison 2008. But, I mean, you look at this, and people are saying, oh, yes, I had an ornament that just simply fell apart on the news. So I get it's getting a lot of heat. So the fire marshal shows up here, this is after Tom Sky and some other incidences, and wanted all the equipment out of here, and then I put up a fight, and I contacted the news media. Michael McArdle of Global Television came and covered the story, and then they backed off. I said, well, just make us a pathway through to your place so we can get to the back door. Oh, my, that was quite an adventure.
Is there anything in those effects that tie into with what HAARP is able to accomplish?
It could be adjusted as such as to the HAARP quite easily.
So
how do you mean that?
Well, it's beaming up the energy right to the ionosphere and past it. If you want to be nasty, you could go right to the ionosphere and into the Van Allen belts, and you've got a Ben Franklin effect, like a kite. I don't know if I got that kind of power to do that, but HAARP does. And there was a lot of warnings about HAARP doing that or accidentally going through the ionosphere and getting into the Van Allen belts, which would cause a Ben Franklin effect, which I call it, when the energy would follow that beam back down Earth and it would stall the Earth's geomagnetic fields. And that was written up in R&D Innovator magazine for contractors for the military some years ago. A friend of mine, a journalist, sister actually, Jean Manning, wrote a book on the HAARP project called Angels Don't Play This HAARP.
No, was that in concert with Nick Begich?
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we've interviewed Nick. You know, we've kind of going without an intro here today, but, I mean, where we've heard of your work here before on this station is when we discussed the 911 effects on metal and things like that and the crossovers that could be shown. Judy Wood discussed some of that. And I think that's mm-hmm. kind of where, I mean, inevitably we're kind of all over the place, but
that's cool.
That's the kind of thing we are most connected to about you, and so certainly that's where a lot of our questions are going to lead. Maybe we'll end up there no matter where we start, but
yeah,
it seems like, are you familiar with a scientist named Paul Leakey up in British Columbia? Published a book called How to Build a UFO. Or a flying saucer, I don't remember.
Oh, I think I ran into him after I did the Canadian news broadcast of levitation. I think he sent me a letter, as I recall.
Well, because the tone is similar. You sound like you're used to kind of having secrets or just an awareness of technology that other people do not in science, and then having it for years, apparently, before it really started to hit the, you know, get into the TV and the radio and all that. And, like I had the same kind of tone about, like, well, you know, it's really not so strange. If you want to build a pyramid, you do this. If you want to build a flying saucer, you would do this. And yet, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just saying that by way of a reminder that it's really exciting. You know, the idea of, like, if I was 17 or whatever and redoing some Tesla research, I'd be just like bouncing off of the walls. And, you know, just on the radio now as an older guy, you know, it just sounds like there's some serious exciting stuff there, and you could just take us right through some of that. I mean, as far as, especially from the beginning, as far as choosing Tesla experiments to redo and what was motivating you and how you jumped up and down with excitement, or just was just so cool that you never did. It was just like, ah, ho-hum, I'll just take the science.
Well, yeah, it is adventurous at the time, and a lot of film people, filmmakers, got that idea and filmed me doing all kinds of strange things, like Beyond Invention, which is now a classic hit, which is actually on Wikipedia. And I built the Ark of the Covenant for Discovery Channel Networks, and that worked very well. So,
did you have the Ark of the Covenant too after you built it?
Yeah. Oh, that was quite a project. It was 6 months in production, and we were working. My lady at the time was Corinne, and I were working away. And built this incredible ark, great giant box made out of acacia wood, and it was actually plated with copper. We couldn't, well, Discovery Channel couldn't discover pay for the gold, but this unit, once I charged it up to collect ions, it started to pull them in really fast and discharge them at an amazing rate and energy level, which luckily was captured by the cameraman, Rudy Fishman. And it just went ballistic with flames and fire and sparks and everything like that. And because I remember the days building it, doing some testing, and then the main producers, Bruce Burgess and Rene Barnett of Blue Book Film, said, okay, John, this is a big day, so I hope it works. And I said, I hope it works too. I got my doubts, but I'm going to give it my best shot. So it was almost a Christmas, I believe, after Christmas, that we moved it out from where we built it into a metal supermarket in Richmond, British Columbia. My friends Nigel, Paul, and John there gave us the entire metal supermarket to test it out in, and it did work. I got kind of nervous. I said, well, wait a minute, it's not supposed to be that energetic. So
the way it worked was that it pulled and discharged ions at
mm-hmm.
a high velocity.
High velocity.
So
very
actually
impressive.
Creating energy.
A lot of it. I got a little nervous of it, as well as Corinne, and Rudy wasn't nervous. He kept filming, and I said, what should we do? And let's just keep filming. I said, okay. Then eventually he said, get a fire extinguisher, and then so Corinne got a fire extinguisher and put it out.
Well, did you
but
ever...
she said that she didn't know how to use it for a second. So, but anyway, it was fantastic what happened there, and there was all kinds of strange little entities which actually were captured on tape that appeared coming
and
out of that thing.
What did the entities appear to be?
Like little, oh my goodness, they look like rods. Maybe, I don't know if people are familiar with those things, but they look like little things zipping around and hiding behind the cherubim and disappearing and reappearing. Now, we have like 52 hours of videotape, and that's all. A lot of it's cut out of it, but a little bit is shown in the grand final of the filming of this. It was that was a lot of fun doing that, too.
And the rods have yet really to be defined outside that they are rods, correct? They're some type of energy.
Yeah, I think so.
Could you see them with the naked eye?
Well, oh yeah, we saw them with the naked eye. They were all over the place. And so Corinne was pointing on the wall, there's one, there's another one, and Rudy actually filmed them, but they unfortunately were not used in the final 1 hour show. I mean, of course, it's under an hour for commercials. So,
now, was that adjustable? Could you have turned it down? Or up,
No, it went on its own speed. It just went ballistic.
Well, after having put it together, do you see that there would be a mechanism to actually regulate its flow?
Oh, I can think of some kind of a major grounding system.
And
work.
And is there a use for it?
A good question. Scare a lot of people. Whether there's other things that I'm not aware of, like other dimensions and that could interfere with what it is, that the principle of it grabbing the ions and producing that amount of energy, that principle itself could be utilized as a possible energy source, I would think. I'm only guessing now, but...
Well, I mean, you must have become somewhat expert on some of the historical... I don't know if you used qubits or not, but you know the historical discussion of how to build such a thing and where to keep it, the Holy of Holies, and then how to protect yourself, or you know why only certain people were dealing with the original Ark of Covenant, why the possessors of it became just incredibly powerful politically. I mean, what's the scoop on that part for you? I mean, did you build a small scale model, or
actually,
you know, how's that
built? Yeah, I did build a small-scale model, which I gave to the Nigel. It seemed to work fine, too. And Rudy filmed that, and he got a lot of strange entities off of that thing. And, you know, unfortunately, it was not... I don't think it was used... No, I think just a clip was used in the actual Ark of the Covenant. Revealed is a full title of it. But Rudy filmed a lot of stuff happening with that tiny ark.
Do you have
of the Covenant?
Do you have any footage of it, even if they didn't put it on the program?
I don't. Unfortunately, I don't have footage. It all went to Blue Book Films. I was too busy working on this stuff to film anything, and I didn't have a camera at the time. Well, that's not true. I did have a camera, but it was bolted in the laboratory, cables coming out of it, but I thought for sure that the producers and that would show all the good stuff like that, but they did not, actually.
Well, do you find that many of the... You say you had so many film crews coming in. Do you find that they put out a lot of what they're filming, or are they censoring it?
No, I think, well, they did, like History Channel, they covered a lot of stuff, but, you know, it's Earth Black Holes. I never seen it until just some weeks ago for the first time. I got a DVD of it now. But there's a lot of stuff they cut out of there. They're just focused on me talking away, and they didn't show any of the lab experiments which were going on at the time. So that particular... one was kind of strange.
What was Earth's black hole? I mean, what were you demonstrating?
Richie Productions, another group talking about that. Earth black holes, they're thinking of the Bermuda Triangle. I've done a lot of shows for the topic Bermuda Triangle. So one idea through Motion Picture Productions was... for History Channel was the idea of a black hole being in the Bermuda Triangle.
What did that's you find?
You know, that's kind of strange when you stop and think of it, because there is a black hole going on down there now. I mean, not a...
A big one.
Yeah, the oil thing.
Yeah.
That's weird, but...
Do you have any idea how we could get this oil back in the box?
I'm amazed how they let this go on so long. They could have had deep sea submarines down there with all kinds of welding equipment and weld the entire thing up. It's really weird. I was looking at CNN's gallons per minute estimated leakage there. You know, you think that BP would have a system already in case of an emergency like that? Would they just come in and drop something right over, like a gigantic canister?
Well, there's a valve. They just didn't install it.
Or even a valve, yeah.
It's like, I don't know,
$500,000. They put it in. They drilled a hole and put the...
Okay, wait. So let's just jump ahead. I mean, like, almost every engineer I've discussed... says almost the same things. You know, surprised they're really not down there really working on it. You know, there's so much you can do underwater, outer space. It wasn't getting done. Let's just say it's a thought experiment, John. If you wanted to use oil distributed through the ocean as a medium, as a process, where would your mind run if you know what would that allow you to do? What would be possible reasons to intentionally allow that oil to flow so heavily?
With all these people? I don't know. It's crazy. First thing you'd think would be, oh yeah, let's get submarines in there and weld it all up. I mean, welding underwater has been done a lot of times. Installation of all the stuff down there through welding and bolts and everything else. I mean, you'd think they would say, okay, this is how we need a plate structure to weld all over top of the metal already existing there and contain it. But no, this goes on and on and on, this strange situation.
Okay, if you can possibly be coerced to conjecture in some other way, I'm not trying to be sneaky. I'm just wondering, some people, even on this station, have conjectured the plan is that the oil will go around Florida, up the coast, across, past Greenland to Iceland. It will be ignited by a volcano in the ocean.
Yeah, I heard that.
Could. It could. I don't know. I mean, if it keeps going like this, there's going to be a lot of oil out there. I think it's under great pressure. That's very deep water, almost a mile deep, and there's a heck of a lot of pressure on the Earth's surface with that amount of water, and that's pressing the oil right out. Extreme pressure.
Well, they could actually use HAARP to get the animals out of the area, and they haven't even approached that.
No. They could use all kinds of different things to get the animals away. But, they built it, they drilled it, they put the cap on it, and all the valves and everything, and then they don't know how to repair it. Like, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, how about, you want to talk about what's wrong with pictures, how about the picture that was, you know, events that took place at 9/11 and some of the effects that took place there that might be tied in with a little bit of Tesla technology. Would you like to go there?
Oh, I don't mind going anywhere, really. I would think that Dr. Wood and her group are probably the best experts in that kind of engineering problem, but I do believe aircraft went into the buildings. My personal opinion is they were being made of aluminum. I think they were vaporized. Most of the aircraft was vaporized at that high velocity. Because I understand ballistics and that. There's some people out there saying, well, it was all faked video. I don't think so, because it's just too much private video coming on to YouTube now, showing all different angles.
So you actually
aircraft.
Think that the planes did a disintegrating, vaporized situation, even though they were metal and bolts?
Yeah,
they're
very fragile things, aircraft, but very heavy, so they would have a lot of foot-pounds of energy with them, loaded with fuel and other things, and looking at the video of it just going right through the steel, well, I can kind of understand that. I mean, if you take a bullet and made of lead, it'll go through a 222 Swift will go through a half-inch piece of steel, no problem. A lead bullet, so I could see where it would bust in through the beams, and plus the beams were actually, all those outer structures were bolted together, I learned later on. But, you know, I've looked at this whole thing at different angles. The amount of metal that was there left after the collapses wasn't much metal. It's like some of it looks like it's totally vaporized.
Have you heard of Artie Wheeler?
I don't know. I might have.
Artie Wheeler was a machinist at GE for many years, and he just assumed that planes hit the building and everything happened like the government said, and it was like, he said a year later, or 3 months later maybe it was, he saw the picture, and in the videos he saw, the the nose cone of the plane had emerged on the other side, looking unscathed and beautiful like your propane tank that sits in your yard, as he says.
Mm-hmm.
And he just turned to the guy next to him and started asking him, like, what the hell was that? And the guy's like, well, you know, that's 911. And, you know, from that point on, he went forward to research every little aspect of it or whatever. And he talks about the floors only being high enough so that, you know, you could get lucky and put a smaller thing in between the floors, but those planes would have hit the floors and just been, you know, ripped to shreds. Cites all kinds of other, you know, crash landings that just immediately make the aluminum crumble. So that leads to the question of, you know, planes involved, firing missiles and then leaving, or maybe what about, have you ever seen what is described as such as an effect on a moving object, or can you imagine a scenario where the energy weapon or whatever it was that vaporized the buildings, dustified the buildings, could do that within an area so that a plane flying into it would also disintegrate in that manner?
Yeah, I could see something like that done on a scale where you have a object coming into a target area and vaporized. We've had metal pieces vaporized in the 1980s, but I suppose anything is possible out there, but
so
a lot of
different... You're not familiar with anything that would, you know, back up any kind of scenario like that, like... I mean, when you're talking about Star Wars weaponry, it's not using anything along the lines of the energies that you were working with in to get that Hutchison effect.
Well, I'm familiar with particle beam technology and other technologies like that in directed energy. I used to experiment with it, and I see a lot of actual kids making particle beam devices on YouTube. That's what they would know, but in the black world or black ops world, there's stuff there that is 10 years, 15 years ahead of what we know out here. And I have friends in those areas that we talk, and sometimes in private, and they say, this is a secret, and I said, okay, I will never mention it, and they just talk about what they know.
So much for the secret.
Okay, no. So wait, there's,
you know, this is, like,
that's like, well, I could address that question, but I'm not allowed to. I can't.
Well, I mean,
can't confirm nor deny.
Yeah, that's using when Nick Cook, a friend of mine, did an epic television show called "The $1 Billion Secret." He got a lot of that too. When he's trying to find out, it was for as a TLC TV show of 2000. And later he published a book on it called The Hunt for Zero Point.
Mm-hmm.
But he ran into a lot of that. I cannot confirm or deny stuff. And he interviewed a lot of people for that special show of his. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are pretty, really wired up on that, you know. They will not talk about it. And they even say, like, John Pike of Security Command says, you know, well, we don't want the public knowing about this. They'll be running around getting the media involved and all that. He admits it right on the interview. So there's a lot of folks that working in that realm that don't want the stuff out there. And then a lot of the folks retire and they leak it all over the place. Leak it to me sometimes, and I'll just say, okay, I don't know you, but I'll put it on the internet.
So in other words, are you saying that there's technology out there that we probably don't even fathom yet?
Oh, there's lots of it. There's it covers everything from biological to advanced weapons systems. If you want the cure for aging, they already have it. Or anti-gravitational machinery, they have it already. I mean, they admit it sometimes on television.
I've almost gotten to view some of the science fiction movies as documentaries.
Oh, yeah, right. I edited that interview today with Johnson, talking about all that. Or was it Alan Watts? A lot of you guys have come on and discussed these ideas, some space platforms that we're not supposed to know about, time travel that we're not supposed to know about, ancient repositories of data, and it would be wonderful to get kind of a little cross criticism for some of those ideas, but maybe you want to kind of steer us would we find more fecund territory looking into your history to find details of experiments, or do you think we might be able to discuss a little bit about space and time and that as far as some detail that you know? Or would you rather steer clear of some of that?
No, I'm open to any topic. I seem to have walked into all these different topics myself, and anything unusual, I'm like a cat, you know, I go out there and I gotta check it out. I thought also one way to get information would be through the Department of Defense's SBIR program, which I joined and got a lot of good information on UFOs and all kinds of strange things. And then the CIA's documentation, I just got lots of stuff from them too.
Well, John, tell us a little bit about your CNN I report.
Oh, good heavens, yes. I joined up with the CNN I report, and I would publish stories and other funny things. And I actually did a TV show called March of the Hobbits in Minnesota, St. Paul's. For kids, I get dressed up in women's clothing, and I play Carla Conniption, the crazy reporter, and then I play myself, and we use green screen. And this reporter is focused on a UFO invasion, and which I'm making these hydrogen balloons, and it's just a funny story. So I took Carla and put her on I Report CNN as the new anchor woman for CNN. They didn't like that at all, and they tore down my profile and plus my 500 uploaded stories. So I let it go for a while, and I did get some eye reports that were used during the Haiti earthquake, because I'm quick to gather communication from ham radio stuff, and he used it. But later on, just a couple of days ago, I thought, I wonder if they're still mad at me at eye report CNN. So I made a profile up, John Cage News, and it looked good. And I thought, okay, I shall now upload some stuff from my YouTube channel. And one was the Canadian UFO stuff that I captured myself, along with other people actually somewhere else in Western Canada here. It's really eerie looking stuff. And I videotaped it and I put it on my YouTube channel. Then I downloaded it, then uploaded it to CNN's iReport. And I thought, it went well. It looks cool. And then I checked later, and it had a warning across it saying, this is viewer discretion is advised. This could be very disturbing. So I grabbed my quick camera, and I videotaped all of that on CNN's iReport and put it onto YouTube. So the next day, actually, my whole profile was removed, and the actual UFO videos and free energy videos were gone too. So that kind of got kind of a little bit angry. So since I'm in communication with some of the producers at CNN, I phoned them, but they were away at the time, yesterday actually, and I haven't phoned them today. I was too busy with other things. So I thought, well, you know, what the heck's, what is so itchy about this stuff, you know? I didn't do anything wrong here. So, I don't know. It's just strange that that I'm banned there. So I thought, well, I wonder what's left there. They don't delete anything, really. You have to find the URLs for all this stuff. So I put in Hutchison Effect CNN, and it pops up the different stories on Google search. So I find the stories. They don't actually delete them. They delete your profile and access to them. So I'm thinking, you know, this is really strange and that. So I tried, then I flipped over to CNN International. I still have a profile up there. I said, oh, I didn't know my profile's on CNN International. Then that had iReport still there. So I said, oh, they're still there. Okay. For more iReports, click here. And I did, and it said, user banned. I'm thinking, what's, you know, you can also log in by using your Facebook account. So I said, okay, I'll do that too. It caused a bit of pandemonium yesterday, logging in and all, mixing this stuff up, but I don't know, you know, it's just hit on the ego, I suppose, because I was a superstar iReporter with a couple of iReports used on CNN, and finding my profile deleted like that. Oops. Oh, well.
Well, it looks like you're kind of used to them. It kind of seems like a tete-a-tete back and forth between you and certain of the government and the media.
Right. Like the men in black were like, well, you can try, but we might knock it down sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever get that visit?
I've had spooks come around here. Canadian spooks are the worst. They show up here, and they stand out like a sore thumb. Oh, how does this apparatus work and all this stuff? And I'm thinking, these guys are spooks. Said, I'm too busy right now. And then they get angry, actually, and they leave and take off. But I've only had a few encounters with them.
They're mad because you understand it and they don't.
I think they do in the more dark realm, or the more secure realms, like... when Canadian, the Director of Scientific Technical Intelligence came out, Dr. Lauren Kuhn and his group from Defense Establishment Pacifica, Dr. Wilson, Dr. Loken, and a bunch of others filmed everything, and then they classified it, said it's a matter of national security, 1986, and that was on the orders of the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada at the time, Eric Nielsen. And luckily I have all this stuff in writing to prove what I'm saying is true, because I write to these people and they write back. So,
well, one of the videos you were, they had Colonel John Alexander on there, and he's kind of known for, I guess his character was kind of picked up in the Men Who Stare at Goats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you worked around any of this remote viewing or any of the things that they're working along those lines?
I do know them. I know a lot of people in the military who give me information. John and I worked together in 1983. We're still in contact. And he appeared on a TLC TV show called Science Frontier, Strange Science, in around 2000. And then he made a reappearance on another show called Beyond Invention, which aired all over the place on Discovery. And then, the end of 2006, he made contact to me to invite me to a friend, now a friend of mine, Gordon Novell, who was back engineering alien spacecraft. And John said, can he contact me? It'd be best to our, you know, benefit us both. And I said, sure, I don't care. So Gordon did phone here, and he said, I have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. I said, okay, not a problem. I did so. Then I got the documentation, and after 2006, I met a lady in Scottsdale, Helena. Then I went on, actually got married there. long story, but I got to meet Gordon Novell, and he would show up at Helena's, and we'd talk about all this UFO stuff and back engineering. So Gordon and I became good friends, and then I had to return to Canada. Then I got... and Helena and I agreed on an annulment. And so I was back up here, and Gordon and I were always in communication. And last year, I spent most of the year in Minnesota.
See you.
Yet another lady. was a news reporter.
While still being considered a valuable resource to Gordon and others, right?
Yeah.
And why is that? I mean, they've got these degrees, and you've been just playing around on your own without the fencing of modern education. What is it then that you've been figuring out that? Because I got another question that's similar, and it has to do with all of us. But among that crew, what's your high value to them? That you've got this some stuff figured out, and all I got to do is call you. And
yeah,
what is that?
What they do.
Well, what's your trick?
He's in motion picture companies for advice. I don't know. I just see stuff and do it. What I say, I put into reality. I don't hide around things or ask for great sums of money. I just do it.
Do you know who Pete Peterson is?
I've heard of the name, yeah.
That's a similar guy, you know, just been working with the government off and on for 30-some years. He's worked a lot in the medical side of things, but, you know, outside the normal realms of science and dealing with frequency attenuation and manipulation as far as dealing with cells individually and dealing with healing people in general. But just, you know, I mean, you got to, on the outside here, looking in, hearing you talk, I mean, it's just this similar type of guy that knows a lot of stuff and can tell you some of it, a teeny little bit, but you got to find the right question. So
I had a lot of training from a lot of, I call them old-timers, engineers and machinists, ham radio people that would teach me a lot of stuff as well. So I would study up what I don't know and then try it out and make mistakes and make good stuff sometimes. One of my favorite things I like doing is machining stuff. So I make my own machine tools and firearms and other crazy things. And it's a challenge to do it because you're working with raw steel, but it's fun and it's kind of cool. With the Tesla stuff, it's looking at it and playing a part, going back in time and seeing what they did use, getting the feel for it, and then actually building it to those standards back a long time ago. So it's kind of fun doing that kind of stuff.
Now, just imagine if you could do that go back in time thing. I mean, because I was just listening to some interviews by David Anderson. Are you familiar with him with the Time Travel Institute or Anderson Institute? And do you ever mess around with any of that technology? Isn't that the same thing that you were doing with the Tesla work?
We found that the metal samples have time distortions in them. That was yet another group, the German folks there at Max Planck Institute, found that metal samples were changing in time. That's when I was in Germany, and they were analyzing these samples. And at the same time, I was reading up on all the DESY, D-E-S-Y, documentation on time particles that they analyzed at the cyclotron. And I could see where they were doing experiments going back and forward in time on a subatomic.
How do you measure time distortion?
Instrumentation, atomic clocks, observations. Really cool stuff. And a time distortion, well, it's like if you, like NASA's already measured that. If you take a rocket ship, go to the moon or go out, you'll find that two atomic clocks have indeed changed time. Falling in regard to the Einsteinian equations. So if you want to travel in time, you can get up to the speed of light and not age much, but the Earth would have aged like millions of years.
All right. Nassim Haramein.
Be pardon?
Nassim Haramein. You know who this is? Discusses Einstein theory as not really being very good. And modern physics not paying attention to the star tetrahedron roots that he puts forward on these massive 3-hour lectures. Have you heard of him at all, Nassim Haramein?
I think I might have. I might even talk to him. So many people have come across my path. It's difficult, you know. It's but I know that René Louis Vallée of France was diametrically opposed to the Einsteinian thinking, and he's a physicist that worked with Andrei Sakharov on developing, well, weapon technology, but
mm-hmm.
he sent me a lot of documentation, which I have never actually had it transcribed yet. It's all in French, or actually in Russian.
Well, will you comment on our current understanding here in our little studio at Cahen here in Salida? We, you know, we've interpreted that along with a lot of other missing data, and that being Nassim's discussion of the assumption that the universe is not rotating, but every subpart of it is immeasurably, and that's part of every equation. But then when you get to the larger universe, you don't figure in any torque. You don't consider any larger scale universe in motion, and that's what leaves out 99% of the energy. And I would think, what's your take on it?
Oh, so many different unique theories. I think a lot of them are cool and interesting. I've seen Discovery Channel television shows really well done on interdimensional sciences, quantum physics. To be honest, I think the mind is connected also to a lot of these different areas, and if you think high positive energy, you'll draw that towards you. If you're into negative stuff a lot, then you'll go the negative way. I don't know, I've seen it many, many times, but answering to that about the universe, I was in deep discussions in around 2000 with a group in Los Angeles about that. And they're working on equations to determine thought patterns, thinking patterns on the movement of the galaxy. That's rather cool stuff that he was working on, and I was trying to give him some advice on it.
Would it be fair to say that that's more intuitive to your mind than a huge amount of invisible matter that you can't see or measure, but we just invented to balance out our equations because we couldn't express the energy otherwise?
Could be. There's a lot of unique stuff that, in regards to energy, that's out there. Zero-point energy being one of them. A very hot topic in the scientific community, especially the military-industrial complex. Because a cubic foot of that energy, if you capture it, will power the Earth's energy needs for 100 years. And somebody actually has developed something that will capture only a tiny piece of that. And that's Dr. Franklin E. Meade of Meade Air Force Base. He put in a patent in 1996 for a zero-point energy collector, and it was accepted by the U.S. Patent Office. And I myself have played around with that a little bit and captured a bit of energy. And
I was wondering if you'd been messing with Teslas. That would definitely be an intriguing one.
Well, yeah, I mean, is there a lay, what David Wilcock calls the elevator length short description of what the difference would be between the device that you built that is the Ark type, Ark of the Covenant collector, and something that only collects, what you're saying, a small part of that energy?
Oh, actually, I built zero-point energy collectors back in 1993, and I took one to Japan on a lecture tour with Dr. Brian O'Leary. Gave my demonstration of it, actually, at the 50th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima City. And it worked fantastic, and I thought, well, it worked fantastic, but the audience and the news media who filmed all this, there's always a little bit of doubt. So I said, without stopping, I said, now I'm going to take this thing all apart to show there's no hidden batteries and all that. So I dismantled the entire thing, and they actually filmed it. And I just tossed it all on the table and said, that's what's working here, is no batteries. So that was quite a demonstration. That was a lot of fun. And that captured the interest of a lot of Japanese folks that funded me for a while in building different models, and then it just sort of vanished, and then the German folks showed up and funded me for a while. And
so what
my
are they,
Germans...
Do they just come and pick your brain and then take off with your thoughts and ideas and go develop it elsewhere?
I often wonder about that. I know that Thomas did not do that. He was a very spiritual man, and I think the Japanese might have, but jumping back to German folks, I think that Thomas, just being spiritual, he, like myself, Matt, you know, money is money. It's what, it helps make things go faster. It's like gasoline, I suppose, but Thomas just wanted to explore and travel, and he didn't want a project to burden him and bog him down, so...
It just sounds so too casual to me still here, Melody. I mean, I just don't... I mean, it is kind of like someone actually getting out of a craft when it lands on the White House lawn. It's like the Standeo engine going into mass production and getting a press release. I mean, that's what you expect. You expect, like, oh, yeah... John Hutchison, he's the inventor who showed, you know, money for nothing, energy for free. And I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, it's to your credit, I guess, really, that you're not going around like going, I'm the victim of a media blackout, a galactic media blackout.
Oh, no, I'm not into that stuff.
But it just seems so casual. You're just firing off stuff like John Lear. Just like, you can tell there's an effort on his part. I'm still figuring you. But he's just kind of like, you know, he was so excited about some of that stuff earlier, and then now he has to apologize about being wrong about, like, the aliens eating us. He admits he's wrong about that and other things, but he's so super casual. But discussing stuff that's just epic. It's huge.
Well, let me go ahead and say this is KHEN LPM FM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, and this is Truth Quest with Melody. We're streamed on the internet at khen.org, and our programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info. And my co-hosts, Katie O'Brien and Shannon Hemingway, are speaking with our very interesting scientist, guest, inventor, I don't know what else do you term to your additions there of your work with the Tesla technology, and we're having kind of a fun little interview here. So anything else, Katie, that you'd like to ask him?
Well, I'd like him to kind of talk about the open-end vacuum tube particle accelerator, the handheld version.
Oh, that sounds like a cool thing. Have I heard about that yet?
Yes, well, I understood that you had built one.
Oh, what is this now? A vacuum tube?
It's a handheld version of an open-ended vacuum tube particle as Tesla. A particle tube accelerator.
Okay.
I mean, according to the site out there, as an exercise, you actually built a small handheld version of it.
I did?
Well, that's what the note said. It's out on your website.
Which website?
Sorry.
There's a lot of pirate websites out there.
But there was one that was a particle beam.
It's Hitchinson Effect.ca.
Oh, that's a pirate website.
Oh, it is. Thank you for letting me know.
Oh, that's a real bad one. Yeah, that's a real pirate.
That's funny, though. Isn't it funny, kind of? Open-ended vacuum tube? That's like a bacon stretcher. Smoke bender.
It did a little more than that, according to the Tesla note. Hitchinson Effect.ca is a pirated site.
So that
it's
starts with an
site, and the webmaster makes a lot of money. $100,000 of extortion so far from that site. That's why I always put up on YouTube and everywhere else, wherever I can. Don't go there.
Well, give us the name of your website.
My main website is, it's http://myspace.com/John K. Hutchison. So that's my main website. And my YouTube website is, or channel is, John K. Hutchison 2008. So those are the two that I have control over myself, because other people have other agendas and put
okay,
up
and
their
that,
own.
That ends in ISON. Is that just to clarify the spelling?
Yeah, Hutchison.
Okay.
And I keep my fans on MySpace in tune to what's going on, as well as the YouTube channel.
So that's
I've uploaded over 3,000. I think it's 3,400 videos. Whoa!
Wow!
That must have been
nice job.
Bored or something. But
that's how you got the $100,000 for the guy to extort with the pirate site.
Now, he started that site in 2006, actually, and there's a lot of websites out there that I have no control over.
But why would someone put up a site like that? Like, who might they be working for? Or are they really just some guy out on their own who's... What would you have to gain?
I really don't know. He's even got an email address, and people will email there, and he actually rewrites the email. I think they're just really got a number of cyber stalkers out there that really, in their own fantasy world, hate my guts. So it's strange. I studied up on cyber stalking and realized that people are actually quite ill.
Okay, maybe you need to correct me if I'm thinking wrong here, but 9-1-1, biggest huge event ever, billions of dollars. War, excuses, Patriot Act,
mm-hmm.
Alternative science researchers looking into it. Judy Wood appears on the scene. She's like, wait, no. Stop asking me the questions. Just look. And then
mm-hmm.
people start going, wow, well, it is kind of unique. Is there any other place we've ever seen this? Well, yeah, there's this guy, John Hutchison, who kind of does it in his basement or whatever, you know. Maybe it's not about what that guy at who put the pirate site up has to gain, but more about what you have to lose about credibility. Is that, have you allowed yourself to think that that might be the case?
Oh, yeah. They've done a good job of knocking my credibility to heck, which I don't really care, but they have. And, like, they would email Lisa Lyon that I use strings on things. They take my videos and add strings to the videos and take the audio out of them. So they'll email coasttocoastam.com, oh yeah, John's a fraud, blah, 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 and all this stuff, and they make up videos of their own. And this stuff gets around, of course, and then a lot of people rely on the Internet for information. Then they get into the Wikipedia and rewrite the entire article in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're a bunch of busy people having fun out there, and they're non-scientists, or maybe they are scientists. I know this person who runs the website is not a scientist. He's just a smart extortionist. But, yeah, there's a lot of problems with stalkers. As far as Internet stuff goes, I rarely meet these people in real life. Actually, I don't.
Well, out there on Wikipedia, they also have that you built this handheld version of the open-ended tube particle accelerator. Wikipedia struck again.
Wow, how funny. Well, probably Adrian now broke into the site.
Wow.
It's been broken into so many times.
That's great.
And rewritten.
I just saw an interview with that guy, you know, who started it, and he's heart's in the right place, but he's saying it's the best information ever because it's constantly being updated and anybody can give their additional information.
I know. How many times have I wrote IC3 reports to the FBI, to Google security to GoDaddy on that site, I just give up and say, okay, it's the internet, who cares? You know, nothing you can do about it.
So that's why some of us interview the people that are involved, so that we can kind of ferret out the truth, I guess.
Yeah, I think real communication through radio and television probably clears a lot of stuff up. Because you got all these little little gremlins running around rewriting everything all over the internet. So it's a bit of a problem if you're relying on the internet to find the information.
Yeah, because TV's so much more honest. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it all takes discernment, but I'm certain that we're always trying to discern in anybody that we've just heard tell us something on the street or radio or TV or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
John, if you had the funds and the access to anything, what would it be your next experiment that you'd want to, or a demonstration that you would like to recreate or create?
I think probably a force field or an energy system, alternative energy system. I've got great interest in life extension sciences. I might use myself as a guinea pig like I have for 20 years so far.
Okay, but now you started it. Let's hear about that.
I started it?
Yeah. Come on.
Let's hear about it.
What's up with that?
With the life extension?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, understanding that aging is a process of a matter of cells going bad over a period of time due to shortening of telomeres lengths. That's why we basically age. It made world news in 1997. And it was the enzyme telomerase can moderate the aging process. I thought, how cool, you know. And as time moved on, the Geron Corporation in Texas got their hands on all different aspects of it. Then eventually some products came out onto the marketplace a couple of years ago, that actually slowed down the aging process. But prior to that, I was taking all the main supplements that Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw wrote their epic book called Life Extension.
Are they still alive?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if they kept their life extended.
Looking for the irony.
Yeah, you have to take it as almost a religion with yourself as a main habit, which I've done, and I open up to new information and new products. Like, actually, one of the fantastic number of products, I don't want to sound like I'm advertising for them, but it's Bell's products. Got all these new things out that cures almost everything. And I had a back injury about a year ago, and I was sore, and I got back here over a month ago, and I was still sore with a back problem, and I went to my local health food store and found Bell's products. I said, well, this guy rings right with me, so I bought up a lot of his stuff, and I got the shark cartilage stuff, and man, that sure cured the back problem issue.
Well, I remember when it was real popular, but it seemed like it had kind of faded away for a while on the shark cartilage.
Certain areas like Arizona and Scottsdale, they have huge health food stores. Sedona, Arizona has a lot there too. Vancouver, a lot of them. On the West Coast especially, Los Angeles, San Francisco. But not too much inland in the middle of the United States. It's
all we have is Boulder here.
Boulder, I've been through Colorado. I went through to the Tesla site and Denver. I gave a lecture in Denver, Colorado, in 1994. Stayed at the Stanley Steamer Hotel.
By comparison, what's the life extension like in years that was either the Pearson target or what you see as the realistic approachable age if people were to use telomerase, adjusting minerals or supplements?
I think telomerase and estergalide 4 are probably the main ones to use in this day and age. And, of course, there's stem cell activators.
Do you get what I'm asking, though? I mean,
mm-hmm.
We talking another 100 years, 200, 500, 40?
Oh, no, this stuff's already in the black ops world anyhow. It's a matter of getting it out into the public domain.
Well, that's why those old elite guys like never die.
No. Still, but the question is, like, you know, the folks down in Boulder who are eating like 100% raw food diet and who are mm-hmm. charging their water, charging their food, they're saying, well, I just want to live as long as a normal earth person does. You know, we've got records of people who are 141, you know, like say up in the Hunza or other far Asian countries or whatever.
Yeah.
141 doesn't sound like what they were originally trying to claim for life extension technology. So that's what I was asking for a number. Do you know if they're shooting for 300 at this point? Or?
Well, they were actually on the news media, mainstream media, 1,000 years. You could live to be 1,000 years old if you want to. Or even reverse the aging process and go backwards in time. And that was main media, 1997. I believe in November, main broadcast. It made a lot of news, and that's a long time ago now already, so you can imagine how far they're advanced with it. But like the Velkabamian people, I was reading a book called Sexual Healing, a quite interesting book, and it touched upon these old-timers who are active in, you know what, until they're like 130, 140. And their diets are simple. They're high elevation people, but their secret seems to be the actual water that has the proper relationship of minerals as natural chelation agents. And manganese is a chelation agent. And I've always been fascinated by minerals and vitamins and enzymes myself, and I've been eating, I often wonder how many tons I've eaten over 20 years' time, but I've eaten a lot of them, and they do work. And I study hard on that topic, and because you don't want to make a mistake and mess yourself up.
Do you think that it's possible that science is an ancient science? And explains things like Saint Germain and others.
It could very well be an ancient science.
Can I ask you? Do you think that we're shortening our lives en masse in a different way, and that it's really not an anomaly to live to 150?
I think so. I think a lot of people live their life in stress. They live their life eating garbage food. I mean, there's millionaires that I know that know nothing about life extension vitamins, and they just eat garbage food and don't care. I've studied that quite a bit, and different folks I know, and what they eat and diets and that. I mean, some of them look ancient for their age, and some look quite young for their age. And I sort of just observe and watch and see what they do, and take notes and think, okay.
Now, when you mentioned going back in time and age, what would they do with that? What do you think they're, do you think they're actively doing something like that now?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, they are. I mean, you have a substance that you take that activates your telomeres. And as time goes on, these telomeres are extended out more so. So you're actually following your basic genetic code information backwards in time. Now, to give an analogy here, let's say you take a photocopy, or you do a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy. Eventually it degrades, but if you did an enhancement slight enhancement a little bit, it becomes super, really clear. So if you have that old, barely readable, poor original photocopy, or whatever you want to call it, and if you put it on the scanner, and it would enhance it every time it did a pass, eventually it would clean up and become actually pretty crisp and clear to read. So that's kind of how the cells work too, because they always divide and separate and over a period of time. So if you're able to enhance it, you can actually start getting younger.
Now, are you familiar with the guy who does a recording of the raspberry plant that's in full health, and then he plays the recording of that field in the presence of a sick raspberry plant, and it becomes healthy?
Oh, that's interesting stuff. I've heard of this kind of stuff being used. I have a friend who appeared in a TV series, Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, Morphic Resonant Fields. He's works in that arena a little bit too. But I've heard of that.
Gee, I'd like to run in your free crowd of friends.
I think that's applicable to humans too, that if they put a high positive energy from themselves to others, that affects other people.
Yeah.
And that's what I tend to practice, and it does seem to affect other people, and anything that's negative, I kind of shy away from it.
Well, we try to pretend we're all balanced in our discussion of both. We definitely are involved with interviewing a lot of people who have some pretty dark things to say about projects to depopulate, you know, intentional agents out there that, you know, mean that you're not just dealing with a neutral food zone and then you can try to eat something super powerful, but in fact that there's just so many, well, you know, it's demonstrated about fluoride and the what's that what's the chemical that the Searle Pharmaceuticals put out while Michelle Obama was the lawyer and Rumsfeld was the CEO? What's this? You know the one? It's in everything. It's aspartame, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Oh, that stuff. That's terrible for your genetics.
So, I mean, did an awareness of that influence you steering towards life extension because of your contact with, you know, deep black science?
No, it was actually the early 80s when I was watching a TV show with Dirk Pearson. I thought, wow, this is kind of cool stuff. Let me play with it a little bit, which I did do. And as time went on, I would sort of drop it and take it again. And then when I was in Germany, when I returned from Germany, I found a book by Pearson again. And I studied it yet again, and then I went to the health food store and started ordering stuff in. Then I got more involved meeting other people, and next thing you know, if I was traveling anywhere, half my luggage is full of all these different bottles. many pounds of stuff. So my dad used to drill in my head. He said, if you don't have your health, you have nothing. So he drilled that in my head. That kind of struck me, I guess, with the life extension stuff, too. If you're feeling sick and ill and nothing else really matters.
So when you run into a lot of these scientists and that sort of, I mean, you're talking about guys that are dealing in some negative areas of energy usage and that. How do you take that? How does that set with you?
Oh, let's see. You mean in person or?
I mean, plenty of these guys are out there probably picking your brain for one thing, trying to figure out how to do some things for money or for power, to seek power.
Oh, yeah.
And
I usually just ignore them. I get a lot of emails. People wanting to pick my brain or come around and see me and all this stuff. And I just, and also phone messages. I had one from Virginia the other night, and they come and go, and I don't even answer the phone. I always screen the calls, and I actually delete them after the answering machine fills up. So it's like a blur to me. And in around 2006, I was invited by Major Peter Gerritsen of the U.S. Pentagon's Advanced Air Force procurement officer to work with them again, because my videos were showed to 400 officers from different alphabet agencies, I guess you call it. And a group came around here, interviewed me, and suggested, you know, that I should do that, and Donald Rumsfeld knows of my work, blah, 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 blah. And I kept all the documents because they sent me emails, which I hit print right away. And I respectfully declined. I said, no, I appreciate it. It'd be kind of cool. I'd like to have an ice cream cone and tour the Pentagon. I think that'd be really cool, being an American history buff like I am. I would do that, which I did with the Alamo, not with an ice cream cone, but I was like, died and thought I'd gone to heaven. The Alamo, how cool, you know? This is really cool. And that was in February. So I respectfully declined because I get a lot of money from, and it's a lot of fun doing it, from television people. But again, the markets crashed in 2008, and, well, no more film crews coming around here. So I made some decisions. I'm actively selling the laboratory here. I'll be moving to the United States.
So are you going to be working with a laboratory at all, or?
I'll be taking part of it with me, along with my antique arms collection, into the U.S., and because last year and part of this year, when I was in Minnesota, I taught a group of people, including television journalist Nancy Lazarian, and how to make power cells, and they came ahead with incredible results, actually powering small motors and other devices. So,
now, was this a device that the Japanese, you took over to Japan?
Actually, these are more simplistic. The one I took over to Japan was more compact and a bit more powerful. I've made a lot of different varieties of these power systems. Some were like 26 volts at a quarter of an ampere that you could hold in your hand. Others were big, 55 pounds, maybe put out 3 volts, 3 amperes. That's pretty good. Others in that same size range would do nothing sometimes, and others would start to collect energy and then go up to 70,000 volts and burn themselves out. So hit and miss with some of these things, but with the group in Minnesota there, they kept on going with hundreds of different varieties of these things and actually got some very dramatic results, which I videotaped and put on YouTube.
What's the variation? Is it chemical or mineral variation, or is it a frequency tuning variation?
It's a combination of both, actually. Nancy was working with frequencies and got some very strange stuff, like burning up water from these things.
Water actually catching on fire.
Yeah.
Wow.
I videotaped it. My tiny, trusty little camera, and she started videotaping all of this stuff, too.
That could have some rather interesting implications then for fuel.
Yeah, well, the idea is to get people off the grid and find a sponsor that will have a factory ready. That seems to be the stumbling block, is the factory situation. And some sponsors, because it is ready to go in factory production.
Well,
geez, I don't know why anybody would want to help you produce the most needed, profitable thing in the known planet needs right now. I mean, geez, that doesn't mean that there's any kind of forces repressing it or anything. I mean, that's just the natural market, right? Nobody has any interest in free energy. Heck no.
Well, you know, free energy, it seems that's... And we presented this to a lot of different people. Some are business types, only bean counters, I call them, but rich guys and bean counters, and there are some other folks that were interested, like political people, that showed an interest. Some of the political people I know that really have an interest is Dennis Kucinich, who I do know, and ex-Congressman Berkeley Bedell, who's also into life extension, who personally visited me here. Actually, they both did. And I get letters from both of them once in a while, how am I doing and what's going on kind of thing. So there is some folks interested, but again, it's like a factory. We did actually a DVD presentation around Christmas time, and I sent one to my friend for a long, long time, very rich character, Prince Hans Adam Liechtenstein. He just sent back a card on that issue, and then other friends in L.A., the Hilton family, Steven Seagal, a bunch of other people I know, Sandy Fox, voice actress, producer friends and folks in Hollywood, with actually good responses coming back in mail, some with a check like $100 in it. That was kind of fun and cool. But generally, it's like, this is fun and cool, but nobody put forth huge amounts of money. And just kind of strange stuff.
Doesn't that strike you as really... it has to strike you as really strange. I mean, if I had access to funds that would back something like that, it just would seem logical, not...
Yeah, but people get killed. I mean, are we going to ignore the kind of stories that are around? I mean, here's the Larry King question. How are you going to avoid reliving the end of Tesla's life, where he really could find anyone to buy into it because they'd all been warned off by their secret societies or just their boss?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Tesla, he...
Died poor,
and I don't intend to go that route. I recognize that area, but... I can change into other things and do other wild and wonderful things. That's what I like to do. At least get the message out there so it'll inspire kids and other folks to do it on their own kind of thing.
And it's, when you're talking about this group in Minnesota, is that kind of a do-it-on-your-own thing? So what you're working with there is something that anybody could do, or you were just trying to manufacture it through this group?
Oh, well, no, this group, Nancy Lazarian, she's a news reporter and has her own TV show, didn't know anything about physics, but now she's making all these crystal power cells. And then Jason, who is a chemical engineer, got involved in this stuff, and Andy the farmer as well, and other people, so they're doing a grassroots... projects. And we had a friend who is a friend of Stephen Rockefeller. He's a friend of mine since 1994, when we first met in Sedona, Arizona, and kept in contact, and he moved to Greenwich, and he came out for a week watching Nancy do her incredible stuff, and he was all excited about it. He understands the energy problems, and he went back to Greenwich and talked to Stephen, and they wanted Nancy to go out to Greenwich and to New York to do demonstrations, but Nancy doesn't trust the Rockefeller family, and, you know, it's just one of those things, so
she's not.
I don't know where all that's going to lead to, but...
Now, you're very graceful, and so I don't want to ask the wrong questions, but... you found a personal spiritual way where you don't have to distrust Rockefellers
and others?
Yeah, I think we're just, all of us are human, really. Some of us just lost our way and pretend to be something, you know. It's all just a matter, I mean, we're all human. When it comes to right down to it, we all eat and have desires, or we're little kids at one time and played around in sandboxes and done naughty things, so. And we all pass away at the end, I mean. So whoever I walked with, that's, you know, they may think they're really great and all that, which is kind of rare because normally I shy away from people like that, but we're just all basically human. It's just what the media makes of people, really, and they can take a person like, who is it? A friend of mine found this lady, David Sarita, filmmaker, found this lady in Vancouver, presented her to Los Angeles, and the media boosted her up into this super icon. Pamela Anderson?
Pamela Sue Anderson, whatever?
She's
actress.
Yeah, Pamela Anderson, I believe it is. I never met her, but he found her. Hollywood boosted her up into this big icon, but what I'm trying to say is you probably could take any lady and do the same thing, really. So I'm trying to, I guess my message is kind of sketchy here, but I've met a lot of entertainers, and I just found basically that they're just down-to-earth people. Because my ex, main ex, was a had her own motion picture company, and she would take me around, and I'd meet Karen Black. I'd meet all kinds of different folks that were just appeared to me quite normal, and were quite down to earth. So when I look at television now, I look at it like, oh, there's a camera, there's a point of view camera, there's all the lighting, there's all the people, and there's the actors and actresses. So it's hard for me to take TV serious. So, like, I was a guest on Star Trek Deep Space Nine set with Herman Zimmerman. And that's like being a Trekkie, that kind of like, that's how it works, you know. And so when I look at Deep Space Nine and Quark's bar there, I think, oh, Yin and I and Herman Zimmerman friends were in there, and Gene Manning.
So, now one of the things that when we were talking about in our last interview, you mentioned something, some kind of an effect that took place, and I don't know which energy field you were working with, but it was almost as though you were talking about these. You mentioned a little bit about different entities, but it was almost as though you were almost talking about interdimensional. Did I miss something, misinterpret what you were talking about, or have you had any kind of effects like that?
Oh, yeah, I think I did mention that during the experiments and that, things would appear and disappear out of existence, and we actually videotaped some of them, or not videotape, a Super 8 millimeter film it. And as well as still photography of these things coming in and out of existence in the laboratory. And it appeared to be like another dimensioning opening up. I thought basically the camera was running and this appeared, and I was like stunned but not scared. It must have lasted maybe a good full minute, and then it vanished. Then I thought, maybe I'm hallucinating. Maybe I'm messing my head up with these radio waves and frequencies. So it was late at night, and I went to bed, and then my partners, I mentioned it to my partners, and they went and got the film developed and showed me it, and I said, wow. But other times after that, of course, these things would appear. And the other people I was with, we'd nickname them, like Carl, a red entity thing that come up out of the ground and go through the ceiling.
Do you think that was time travel or extra-dimensional travel?
I think it was extra interdimensional travel of some kind. These things would appear and disappear, and extremely strange things would happen, like initials written on a piece of metal, or the lab isn't even plugged in and still running. Are we crazy or what? You know, and we try and document as much as we can. It's like the lab itself tied into some other dimension and is self-powering itself. That was pretty scary. Every time we turned on the machinery, it got more powerful.
Do you still have that machinery, or was this some of that was confiscated?
Oh, that was, that heavy-duty machinery was confiscated by the Canadian government, but even like up here, whatever happened to Tom Sky and the people in New Westminster here, which caused the mayor to act upon it, basically saying this is not zoned for levitation. Being a staunch supporter of me, he was previously here visiting and really liked it, and the local media would do stories on the stuff in here, and Michael McArdle at Global Television, in amongst the Fox TV people and other CNN and other people that come in and out of here all the time. There's a lot of shows I have that haven't aired yet. One of them shows a 15-minute levitation that was radio host Rob Simone actually was a witness to that while it was being filmed. Polar Shift Film Productions. That would be cool if that aired about this time now.
So eventually they did get proper zoning for levitation in your area.
Yeah, I did comply a little bit to the fire marshal's wishes, and then once that was all settled, I started doing the demonstrations again for different agencies representing the main networks, which they, what they call subcontractors.
Well, there's a magician that comes out of Las Vegas they were doing television programs on that would levitate. Are you familiar with this person?
I can't. Is that Christo the magician?
I'm not sure if that's the right name or not. Have you?
I think I'm familiar with that. I've seen it on television, and of course, television, again, I learned a lot from the industry itself. It's all basically scripted.
Uh-huh. Okay, so, I mean, I would imagine that's the case, but there's real levitation and fake levitation? And
yeah. Oh, there's a lot of fake levitation. Anybody can do fake levitation.
Right.
On TV.
One of the most classical ones was Fred Astaire and his dancing on the ceiling business.
Oh, yeah.
They built a gigantic room, which was actually, you could rotate the entire room. Now, I get some of my little stalker friends say I do the same thing, and I don't think the landlord would be too appreciative of me rotating around all this equipment on gimbals. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Skeptics are really, some of them are really crazy. But.
So you suffer from a lot of people just not even really getting it at all, not even being able to get the 10% of your science, huh?
Yeah, it's a lot of the little rascals out there, they say I film everything upside down. I'm thinking, oh, really? The only things I film are usually with a lot of other people around filming it. So I guess the news people are all upside down filming everything.
Did you get into any of the experiments or that maybe the Nazis had been involved in?
The Nazi Bell experiments?
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing a lot of stuff in Germany and Austria when I was over there in regards to levitation experiments. Left behind artifacts, metal things that people were experimenting with, but I never seen a actual levitation. I know Nick Cook of Jane's Defense Weekly did a History Channel report on that, the Nancy Bell experiments. He did actually quite an interesting job in that show. Other than that, my ex, Ian Gazda, filmmaker, if you Google search, she just released a bombshell a month or two ago. Grandpa, well, he is a famous guy, Antoine Gazda. I Google searched out his name and images, and up pops all the stuff on Gazda. Gazda helicopters. Gazda, he invented the 20mm Oerlikon anti-aircraft gun. Oh, well, my ex has been kind of secretive that way, even in her film production stuff. But...
So, with the Philadelphia experiment, did you get involved with anything along those lines?
Oh, I sure did. I had samples reappear and disappear. And then in around 2006, a friend of mine, Ron Melaloni, who is with Ghost Hunters, and I teamed up. And we're going to actually do a television series, 13 episodes on all this stuff, through these producers, Kevin Albar, who's an actor-producer in Los Angeles, and Robert Drake, same thing, and other people. And even the Roddenberry family, we talked and talked, blah, 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 about doing this 13 episodes. We put the episodes all together covering time travel, and one of them was the Philadelphia experiment. And I actually reproduced a small version of it up here with a foot-long ship, plastic ship actually in water, and I thought, what would happen if I bombard it with x-rays, or not x-rays, but radar and other frequencies, and it built up amazing amounts of energy and discharged into the water. The water started to levitate, and it would sort of wink in and out of existence. Like, I got, there's a small amount of it on the internet, but I got like an hour or more of video, which has a lot of impressive stuff on it. And so I was doing that for this TV show idea, and then when John Ealer of History Channel was up here filming, it was doing the same thing, and that's Earth Black Holes, which I mentioned previous. You didn't show any of that on your Earth Black Hole thing. Ouch, you know, what happens in the editing room with all that cool footage, you know? So I've done that in 2006, and then for John Ealer in the end of 2008, I believe. No, that was 2007. Then it aired on History Channel, but.
And you were.
Then Tom.
And you were involved with Star Wars work somehow. Is that correct?
Yeah, we were one of the first ones on the Star Wars project.
And what was behind that? What was the technology there? Does it tie in anything with directed energy weapons?
Oh, 100%, because the United States government folks were talking to me about, we need to know. We feel the Russians have something similar, and we need to know what you can do with your stuff. So that's when I thought, oh, well, I don't want the Russians knowing, or an unfriendly country, so I gave the demonstration to the entire group, which they took all the information and vanished into the national laboratories with it. But
I'm sensing a pattern here. You know, freewheeling, adventurous inventor comes up with something in his own lab because he's not being steered and mind-controlled by some university, because he decides to do his research alone, and it actually works. People come out, they take pictures, they interview them, but the stuff that ends up in the public domain tends to be the talking about wild things that are easy for an immature mind to dismiss, because it just deals with so much intermediate science that links it to something that wouldn't seem quite so far out then, but the intermediate science is missing. And you're kind of citing television as one of the major influences of this. But I wonder if our guest John Taylor Gatto wasn't more on target with the real roots to the lack of understanding in the easily fooled public is the educational system.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you feel that perhaps the educational system is working just as hard as the TV in your eyes to kind of dumb us down. But then there's this, I don't know, you remind me of my best friend back in high school, you know, like 165 IQ or higher, you know, and just like was really rational about all things and didn't get really very flustered even about the most incredible, unique things that pop up. And then, you know, just he surrounded by people, I was trying to use him. I was trying to spin, but he's just a graceful guy who decides, you know, I could get into trouble if I go too far with this, right? I mean, there's people who've said less, but in a different way, and have gotten into much deeper hassle than you, unless you've got some hidden hassle that you're not sharing with. It sounds like you've been quite graceful. But, you know, what we keep dealing with is there's a lot of active hiding. You know, there's discouraging with violence and with, you know, death and all that, discouraging people from understanding. And, you know, a lot of other people who are dealing with other tips of the iceberg that you're describing is, you know, a group of people who are they're kind of afraid to say more, you know. They're what they're trying to say is wake up, you know. It's not a world government, it's a world corporation limited. That's what Daniel Estulin says, right? And he's trying to tie some of this all together to say, yeah, well, it is normal for the elite to have this. And you kind of might be automatically just within the elite by accident, right?
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite writers says, we are the Illuminati. I mean, we all are participating in this consciousness web. But someone like you, I mean, what is it? I mean, you're at work now for a minute here, so you can say what's true about your own true intelligence. You know, what's unique about you compared to people who, I mean, you went to public schooling?
I was a grade 8.
Uh-huh.
I had to get a tutor, actually. At that time, I was into chemistry quite a bit. I loved making nitroglycerin and gunpowder, because it's scaring the neighbors, but... as a kid, I had a private tutor for a while, but I could never follow the normal kind of path kind of thing, like... Oh, get a job and do this kind of thing, like day in and day out. I tried that experiment by getting a job, and it only lasted 2 days. And I said, who in their right mind is going to be like a robot for 8 hours and do this? You know, I'll try and find another solution.
Was your dad or your family anything into that inventing aspect or thinking outside the box, or were they pretty much just... one of the guys in there being a robot?
My dad was a professional businessman in Vancouver. He tended to like what he was doing, and I would watch him. My mother was actually a very psychic, romantic, flamboyant person, and she would, like, support me and say, well, let's make some trinitroglycerin and blow off a rock or something. I said, okay, cool. You know, she's really like that. Or let's fire a cannon off.
That explains
I said, okay,
a little.
You know, we'd do that kind of stuff. So I had those two, my dad being very logical and business type, saying, well, if you don't go to school, you're not going to amount to anything. And yet my mother, on the other hand, so don't worry, he's got special talents. He'll make it, all this kind of thing. So I had those two influences on me. Which I guess maybe made me the strange dude I am today, I suppose. But
okay, but the question kind of is, I mean, you're graceful and humble, but not to the point of a lack of awareness of your own intelligence. So you must know that, and you must see the contrast. So is it just kind of some keys, some accidental information, or what else is it about you that is setting you apart mentally from people who accept a different science?
I guess I'm not connected in or locked into the routine of that people are studying. Like I mentioned, Jason, he's really locked into the chemical engineering stuff, and so you got to look beyond that. I noticed in your handbooks or your books on chemical engineering, they don't even mention anything about electrets, which is self-charged, mm-hmm. powered wax and tar, you know, kind of thing. So,
interesting. I really appreciate your coming on this program and you know, having this conversation and letting us kind of, you know, delve in avenues, some that you're not as familiar with as others, but I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did.
Can I just...
Oh, me too.
Can I ask you, electrets?
Yeah.
That's a big part of what you're trying to get Jason to see. Because
yeah.
it's related to your energy devices, isn't it?
That's right. It's wax or tar that's
okay.
charged up with direct current. When it's melted and it cools down, it's supposed to hold the charge. And in some cases it doesn't. In other cases it does for a little bit. But in the Westinghouse process, they actually make self-charging capacitors, which are very powerful. So we're uh-huh. still refining that free energy, I guess, angle.
I just wanted to clarify that, because that's part of Pete Peterson, one of the guys that we're looking at interviewing as well, talks about the significance of using that as like a bioelectric mechanism that heals your body, using a little device at your acupressure points at your what aren't really meridians because of a better understanding of science. But we're all speaking into an electret right now. Every microphone, except for Melody's $1,000 UB Telefunken 47 or whatever it is. It's all just, it holds the charge forever.
That's right.
I mean, that's like a violation of the no such thing as perpetual motion, no such thing as lingering energy effects that stay as a field.
Exactly. And electrets have been around since the turn of the century.
Well, again, I want to thank you very much for coming on and having this fun interview. I hope, and I hope it was for you. And
I think it was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate the questions.
And Katie, I'm sure you enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you very much, John. And Shane.
Real pleasure.
And Melody.
Real pleasure.
and I hope again we can do this again sometime. And I want to again say thank you, John.
My pleasure. And that was a lot of fun.
Okay, good night.